Well, welcome to our class on board etiquette. I wasn't sure with such a venerable group of brethren if we have a need for a class on etiquette. Sounds like something for a sixth grade school class. Learn which spoon to use and when and that type of thing. But I'd like to take a look at... That's an insult. Take it however you wish. I'd like to look at the word etiquette. And I think if we understand its meaning and how it might apply to us, we're going to get some benefit from that.
Oh, sorry.
The word etiquette is actually of French origin. The meaning of etiquette has changed a bit from its original, but I'd like to go back to the story of where the term originated. This goes way back to Louis XIV, reading from an article. "We tip our hats to the French, and more specifically to King Louis XIV, for the origin of the word etiquette. In the 1600s, King Louis XIV resided at Versailles in France, which was a transformed royal hunting lodge that became the world's largest palace. When his gardener, an aged Scotsman, was charged with seeding the massive lawns of Versailles, he grew frustrated with trespassers who continually trampled on the beautiful lawns. The gardener cleverly thought he would stop their rude acts by placing warning signs or tickets saying, 'Keep off the grass.' In French, these warning signs were called etiquettes," which is our word ticket, or a sign, a notice. "However, the dukes and duchesses ignored the signs or etiquettes, and they continued trampling. When the gardener complained to the king ordered an edict demanding that no one was to go beyond the bounds of the etiquettes. Eventually, this decree applied to all the rules of proper behavior and became the accepted convention for good manners throughout the centuries. Therefore, the king's intentions to tame the nobility and impress foreign dignitaries was achieved by setting the example for civility, decorum, and good breeding throughout the land." So the word etiquette goes back to a French palace where the gardener posted these little etiquette signs. Now, the meaning of the term etiquette has changed a bit, but it's still the sense of keep off the grass still applies. There are boundaries in relationships. Be considerate. In the book The Rituals of Dinner, the author states, "Behind every rule of table etiquette lurks the determination of each person present to be a diner and not a dish." Think about that. The determination of each person to be a diner and not a dish. No society exists without manners, and specifically without rules that govern eating behavior. Table manners are politeness where food is concerned. Without etiquette or manners, people become animals who bite and devour one another. Sometimes it's spiritually and emotionally, moving from being a diner to the dish. And if you follow it to its end, it becomes literal in some cultures. It has been a literal dining on each other, turning each other into dishes. Now that's far away from our culture, but turning each other into dishes emotionally isn't so far away from our culture. Etiquette is going to prevent us from doing that. Certainly, we want to say please and thank you. Cover up the sneeze. Wash the grease off your hands before visiting school. But etiquette also expresses something more, something we call the principles of etiquette. There are three principles of etiquette. First is consideration. First principle of etiquette or good manners is consideration. Consider the other person. It's the opposite of self-centeredness. It's getting your eyes off of what I want out of this situation into what do you want out of the situation? What are you experiencing in this situation? Put yourself in the other person's shoes is how we often say it. Consider his perspective. Step out of your world into his. As it relates to school boards, relating to teachers or parents, consider the other person's stress load, total experiences outside of the situation under focus, their background, their maturity level. Not only being considerate, as we often use the word, to be kind, but to truly consider. Put yourself into their situation. Think through what they're experiencing and facing. That teacher that comes to you stressed out about this particular student or this problem that he's facing in the classroom. Try to put yourself in those shoes and think about what they're experiencing. Try to understand. The second principle of etiquette is respect. Respect says that you matter, you're important. There's a lot of disrespect in our culture today where I am number one and your interest, your comfort, your whatever doesn't really hold any weight to me. Now that shouldn't happen in our churches, in our schools, but it's human nature. And our first thought in any given situation is often by default, myself. How does this make me feel? Even for mature Christians, there's that, well, here's what I'm familiar with, and so that's where I begin in my analysis of the problem, the situation. Respect says, you're important. I'm paying attention to you. I'm listening to you. I care how you feel. Never insinuate a demeaning attitude or a snide remark about that problem student or that family with their issues. Be respectful. The third one is honesty. In our consideration and respect for others, we also need to be honest. As a moderator, talking to the school boards, as a moderator between the teacher and the parents, in all your consideration and respect for both parties, be honest. In your effort to avoid conflict, don't tell the teacher one thing to make them feel good, and then tell the parent something different to make them feel good, and you're not really being honest. Like the preacher that was driving around visiting his members, working on some relationship issues, and his wife rode along, listening in on these conversations, and they stop at the first place, and as they're he's listening to this, well, yeah, you're right. That's exactly right. Yeah. I agree. They go to stop two. Well, yeah, you're right. You know, that's exactly right. They go to stop three. Well, yeah, you're right. That's exactly right. And as they drive off from stop three, his wife says to him, you know, they can't all be right. We do need to be honest. And sometimes that means we need to disagree. However, when you have to disagree, always cycle back first to principles one and two. You can be honest with consideration and respect. But in your effort to avoid conflict, don't become a people pleaser where you try to make everybody feel good and miss the bullseye and leave people feeling frustrated. Underneath these three principles of etiquette, the underlying foundation that anchors them is our common Creator God, who made each of us in his image and bestowed us with dignity, purpose, and eternal value. Every person from the first graders to the high schoolers to the teacher to the parents to the school board, everybody is made in God's image and deserves all of this etiquette. And they deserve it even when they may be frustrating and immature and maybe throwing their poor etiquette in your face. It can be the hardest time to hang on to your own etiquette when confronted with someone else's poor etiquette. Etiquette is more about behavior than anything else. Knowing which fork to use may gain brownie points in some circles, but it's how we treat others that matters most. And really, the simplest solution is just to remember the golden rule. Treat others the way you want to be treated. In our relationships in school, we have a four-way relationship. Four key parties in these relationships. We have the school board, we have the teachers, we have the parents, and the children. And perhaps especially for the chairman, this can become intense because he's the point man in all of that. The chairman is the one who is responsible to represent the board to the parents and to the teachers, to pull the board together and to present a united, unified response to the other parties involved. There's a lot of logistics involved in school board work. You have a lot of planning to do. You pay the bills, you plan this and maintenance and all of that, which may not seem real relationship oriented, but through it all, and particularly in many of the situations, there is a pretty intense relationship focus. A lot of communication required, a lot of interaction with people. And through it all runs the overarching purpose of providing parents with a quality education for their children, which is their most tender, their most valuable asset that they have, with all of its attending emotions. And so etiquette is really important in the work of the school. We're not talking about harvesting grass seed or building mini barns or other things. We're talking about children with their needs and parents' emotions for their children, and that can become pretty intense. Well, let's talk a bit about some applications of etiquette to board responsibilities. And there's all kinds of directions we could go with this, and in the previous topic we just had, some of you were in, we hit some of those things, I believe, already. But we like to dig a little deeper in applying these principles to board responsibilities. And I invite your input. We have, I suspect, considerable board experience sitting here. I don't know how many years each of you represent on the school board. Some of you also have been school teachers, maybe still are, I don't know. You have a lot of insights, perhaps, on what board etiquette should look like, or maybe what it shouldn't look like. I did ask some teachers for their input. What does board etiquette mean to you? You want to guess what was a common theme that ran through most of their responses? If you're a school teacher or had experience teaching, maybe some things pop right into your mind, because we're kind of looking from the teacher perspective at the school board critiquing. What might be something teachers would say, here's an area that I wish my board would have a little better etiquette? Yes?
Criticism.
How do you mean?
Criticizing the teachers, I think.
Okay, so the board is too critical?
Well, maybe at the wrong time or the wrong location.
Okay. All right, just take some pressure off of me here. Okay. Teachers feel a little pressured by their boards. Okay, there was something over here.
Communication.
Communication.
Communication could be better sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm. Communication between board and teachers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other ideas? Well, good points. Communication is what I heard. That was the first thing that most people... I expected the criticism, honestly. You know, I mean, after all, these boards are the ones that hand out the orders and have the input, and I'm sure that that is a challenge for some teachers. But the first thing I heard was, I would like more communication with the school board. So I'm just going to go down through a few comments. Teacher one... told me that his faculty, they have a faculty meeting with the school board for half an hour, associated with a parent-teacher meeting every 6 weeks. So every 6 weeks they have a parent-teacher meeting preceded by a board meeting, which the last part, half an hour just before meeting with all the parents, is when the board meets, calls the teachers in, and they have half an hour to talk. And that's every 6 weeks. And that's the extent of the teacher board formal communication. And he suggested to his board that at least once a month or in between each of those sessions, why don't we just have another just for meeting with the faculty without a time limit where we can sit down and talk. Well, that's interesting. Each school has their own way of handling that. Perhaps your school has the ideal setup where you have a meeting with the teachers without a time limit or whatever, and it's frequent. But that's something to consider. Make sure that they're getting adequate time to talk. Because if there is a time limit, then you better follow up later in some way. Teacher two. This teacher, and this came through one teacher to another one to me, the sister teacher, says she finds it difficult to have a new chairman every year. And here again, each school has their own way of setting up their boards and electing the board members and who's the chairman and all that. So if your school is locked into a system where there's a new chairman every year, I would just say be conscious of making sure that you're communicating well with the teachers and the former chairman in making a smooth transition. And she was experiencing whiplash. One chairman has grand ideas and is a visionary. We're going to do this and do that. And, so try to go with the flow in that scheme. And then next year, where's the chairman? You know, he's pretty much missing in action. And so there's this whiplash of back and forth. And I don't have the answer for, leveling all that out. You have a system and you probably can't change that overnight. But if you find yourself as a chairman taking over, be aware of what transpired in the previous year and how you can ease into your administration without a lot of whiplash. Keep that communication open with the teachers and find out what's important to them. How did that work out last year? What would you like to see this year? How can I help you in that? Teacher three appreciates, and this was a compliment to his school board, appreciates the clear expectations and procedures that his chairman communicates. The chairman begins the year with a plan. There's clear expectations of who's responsible for what, here's where we're headed, and he felt his board was doing a good job with that. Teacher four wanted to see clear decisions from a school board. So the teacher brought up an issue at a board meeting. What should I do about this situation? And as sometimes it's necessary, the board says, well, we will discuss that and get back to you. And so this teacher asked me, when is it appropriate for me as a teacher, when I never hear back, to go to the school board and say, did you make a decision on that, or what is the decision? That leaves the teacher in a bit of an awkward position. So as a school board, and chairman's the point man for this, you need to follow up. If you say, well, we'll get back to you, then you need to do that in a timely way. And if you need more time and it's gone a week and it's a hot issue, the teacher needs resolution, communicate and say, you know what, we're still working on that. We do want to get back to you. Whatever. Just communicate again. Stay in touch. This teacher also said he appreciates if his board is united. So the board will not always agree on everything. But you are not considerate to your teachers if one board member says one thing to the teacher and another board member says another thing to the teacher on a controversial issue. Now, the teachers aren't dummies. They will know probably what the differing opinions are, and it's natural there's going to be differing opinions on a school board. That's to be expected. If there's not, probably there's only one person doing the thinking. However, in this situation, the one board member says to the teacher, now don't go and talk with so-and-so board member about this. Just talk to me about it and just not talk to him. That left him in an awkward position. And he said he was able to find resolution by talking to the chairman. They got it pulled together. But present a united front. As you communicate with your teachers, it's best for the chairman, I believe, to present decisions and what we're doing rather than this person saying that, another one saying another thing. Communication is important. So another teacher mentioned specifically that he appreciates a school board that leads. Now, you have to keep your ear to the ground with this one because, as we heard in some previous topics today, there are experienced teachers that should be that are able to move forward on their own on a lot of things. And then there are newer teachers that perhaps are leaning too heavily on the board and need to be pushed into making some of their own decisions and putting their creativity to work to problem solve. However, if the school board invariably has nothing to suggest or come up with to support the teacher on a question, it can leave him feeling as if he doesn't have a board. So what do you think about switching to a different science book for grade 6? Hear them out about the challenges of the current book, the merits and the demerits of the new one that he's thinking about, and check out the book if you can, weigh their opinion, get your own opinion, and give a board decision if that's appropriate. Give input. Don't leave the teacher feeling like he doesn't have a school board. But neither do you want to be controlling, like we heard, critical, controlling, breathing down their neck. And that takes some understanding of the personality of the teacher, the experience level, and all of that. Another point would be to listen. Everyone wants to be heard. If you're going to be considerate and show respect, you are going to have to listen to your teachers. We all know that sticky situations can come up in school life and emotions can run high. As parents are trusting their children to the school and the teachers work with imperfect, sometimes struggling children every day, and the chairman is left to try to grapple with all this and pull it together. Sometimes there are decisions that need to be made regarding an issue. A student might need his curriculum tweaked for his unique needs. Maybe a teacher needs new strategies for dealing with that child that is hyperactive and unable to focus in class. And there may be a point for calling the shots at times. But many times, the stress point that a teacher or a parent is facing, or even a teacher's boarding family situation, it craves acceptance and a hearing rather than a dramatic mitigation or rescue operation. Hearing, listening, having the person feel understood may be all that they need. There are, I believe, many challenges in academics, relationships between parents, teachers, board members. They're not going to go away overnight. There's no magic button to push in many cases and say, problem solved. Now we can go back to our day job and do what we really want to do. It's, in other words, there's not always an easy fix. And I think acceptance of that is often the first step toward finding a solution. And sometimes the difference between letting that situation deteriorate and go downhill or nudging it to higher ground is simply for the person involved, the people involved, to feel heard and understood. The teacher knows that the board understands the frustration I'm experiencing every day with this child who just won't sit still in her desk and do her lessons. And the parent believes that the board understands how this child has unique needs, and the teacher maybe isn't quite understanding that, and there's understanding, even if there's not a lot of action. Now, that's not an excuse for inaction if something needs to be done. But your doing and your decisions are going to be a lot better received if both parent and teacher first feel heard and understood. And sometimes being heard is all it takes for the creative juices to start flowing and for that person to problem solve. Solicit opinions. Proper etiquette in board meetings and faculty meetings. If you're the chairman, you're responsible to chair this meeting and make sure that everyone has an opportunity to express themselves. And I think it's important to, as a subject is being discussed, to go around and ask for input from each person. And if it's a small group, that may naturally take care of itself. But be alert to that. Is there one or two members that hasn't spoken up yet? This could be especially important in relating to sister teachers in a faculty meeting. There could be hesitancy there to just dump everything out about their thoughts in front of a group of venerable brethren. The quieter person and maybe the deeper thinker might have a perspective that changes the course of action for the better and would have been missed if their input had not been requested. Make sure that each person is invited to share. That communicates that you're important, you're needed here, your input, your thoughts are valuable. Proper etiquette is going to respect confidentiality. As a school board, you have a window into some weaknesses and some strengths, but you have a window into some weaknesses at times that you need to handle carefully. We don't exploit. Our goal is to strengthen weaknesses, not exploit them or share them around the community with people that really don't need to know about it. In small communities, this can be extra challenging if everybody knows each other so well. But respect the information that is shared with you. Sometimes home weaknesses come to light in a school setting. The children from this family just seem to struggle with so-and-so. What are you going to do with that? Well, that may require some discussion at a board meeting, but let's get back to etiquette, consideration, put yourself in their shoes. Remember that at some point it might be your family, your family's children, that need that kind of conversation at a school board meeting. Respect, even if that particular family or that child does struggle with something, they are still to be respected. Be careful with information that you have. As far as confidentiality, also, are school board children the first to have all the inside information about school board decisions and who the next teacher is going to be and where we're going on the field trip, school plans? And they come to school telling the teacher about what's going to happen next or the other children. Be careful with that. As board members, if you have children in school, don't come home from a board meeting and tell them all about what you talked about and what the decisions were made. They might be bugging you to know, where are we going on that school trip? Who's going to be the next teacher? Well, you'll find out when you need to know. Let the information come through the proper channels. Let it come through the same channels as the other children. And sometimes there might be slip-ups, but as much as possible, let's try to make it that way. Let's think about tactfulness in relating to sister teachers. I don't know how you find that. As board chairman, we usually have some sister teachers in our schools. Often there's one or two in the lower grades, and then we have one or two upper grade teachers, brethren. And how do you relate in a way that brings out the conversation, the challenges that they're facing, and without making them feel intimidated or uncomfortable? Obviously, personalities are going to enter into this picture, and each school setting, again, is different. Maybe you have some ideas on how to make that flow well. How can we make sister teachers feel included? I mean, it's easy to step into the head teacher's room and, you know, chat for half an hour about the farm and everything else, and by the way, how's school going? And maybe you're comfortable doing that with the sister teachers too, but we need to have consideration there for the chairman to be hanging out in the sister teacher's room for half an hour alone. What do we do? Yes. Find common ground. Mm-hmm. Find connection points.
One thing that I've noticed that helps, I can get more information. Stop in after school and the teachers are talking right after school. Mm-hmm. In our school, they kind of talk for a little while before they go do their checking. If you get the right thing, mm-hmm. you can hear actually what's happening.
Timing. Timing is important there. That's a real good thought. So in that setting, the teachers are together, you know, chatting in the hallway or whatever after the students were dismissed, and it's a little bit more informal. There's not focus on one person. Chairman steps in, how's school going? You know, put them on the spot. I like that. So that can happen. Let it happen naturally. Now, obviously, in that setting, maybe they don't want to share everything in front of all the other teachers. There might still be need for some private conversation, but it flows more naturally. All right, anything else?
Yeah,
Well, I would say know your teachers, understand where their comfort lines are. For some, it may be very intimidating to sit at a board meeting with a group of brethren, particularly if there's only one sister teacher and we have this big group of brethren. And maybe checking in with the teacher prior to the board meeting, whether a phone call or a drop-in in person at school before the board meeting, and how's school going, and get some one-on-one input. And then when you're chairing the meeting, and you get to, you know, so-and-so brother, how's school going? Get your input. Now, sister teacher, your turn to talk. You can introduce that if it's a shy person by saying, now, you've been telling me that here's something you're facing, and would you like to tell us more about that? It can kind of ease into the conversation a little bit more and draw them out if you as the chairman already have a little bit of a sense of where they are. Just a thought. In other words, help them with sharing with this group of dignitaries. Know what's most comfortable. Is it going to work best to drop in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to chat in person, or is a phone call at 3 o'clock going to help that sister teacher feel more comfortable and share more? Just something to think about. Also, when you're talking with them, regardless of whether it's in person or phone or whatever, draw them out. Ask leading questions about how school is going. In my experience, when I've asked a teacher, and I tended to find this more with sister teachers, I believe, than with the brothers, you ask, especially a younger teacher, so how's school going? Well, that's kind of a wide open question, and often the first response is, oh, it's fine. Yeah, it's great. Okay, but I want to hear a little bit, you know, you kind of sense maybe there's some things that aren't great, and yet the first response is, well, yeah, it's fine. But there's a little bit of intimidation about really being open. So to ask some leading questions can help to draw that out. So how are you making out with this student that last board meeting you reported was getting low grades? How's that situation going? The student that's having trouble focusing in class, how's that working out for you? How are you finding recess time? Is it, ask questions specifically to bring out some things, and you're going to be surprised at what all can come out of the woodwork when you start drawing the person out. Sometimes it's just a matter of breaking the ice. Maybe you had more thoughts on that.
In some cases, is it okay to involve the wives?
I think so. I had one teacher that I asked for input suggest that maybe the school teacher, the sister teacher, might feel more comfortable talking to the chairman's wife. And I believe there is a place for that informally. I would make sure it's clear that the chairman's wife is not the chairman. And so, you know, we're not making decisions here. But as far as a relationship and a chit-chat, the chairman may get some feedback from that conversation that he would have missed otherwise. I think there's a place for that if it's understood, you know, who's running things, and that this is a sister-to-sister relationship. How are you making out? Your responsibility as a school board is one of service. The board does not exist to rule, but to serve. If you want to implement the three principles of etiquette, you need to understand that. You're not rulers, you're servants. And who's the customer? Who are you serving? The parents, not the children. You're serving the parents. The school is being operated for the benefit of the parents. Now, the children, of course, are getting the education, not the parents, although the parents get a fair amount of it sometimes, too, and we as board members. But the parents are the highest authority in the child's life, and the ones held accountable by God are the parents. The parents have chosen to send their children to your school. understand what the parents' vision and goals are for their children's education. Now, it's a rare group of people running a school together that always have identical vision and goals for their children's education. Your role as a school board, as a chairman, is to pull together a plan of action that encompasses as many elements of that as you can and have a unified approach. You're not going to please everyone. To some degree, every community or school has to achieve sufficient unity of vision to actually pull together and implement a plan of education. Some parents want their children to get a high school diploma and succeed at the upper levels, and others can't wait until their child is through grade 8 to get out and help on the farm. It can be a challenge to bring together those differences. However, your goal is not to just implement your concepts, but to pull it together and serve the community. There will still exist differences of goals even after you have a plan of action, but the board needs to exercise their etiquette in hearing out those differences and be considerate of that in coordinating and making decisions. And ultimately, someone's going to have to bend and work together and say, well, this isn't my preference, but obviously we need to do something. We're going to work together. You are a bridge. As a school board, you're a bridge between the parents and the teachers. Now, that may not seem very important or really come much into focus until there's a problem. Usually, the lack of a bridge is only exhibited when you want to cross from one side to the other. And where's the bridge? It's not there. When an issue comes up with a child where the teacher and the parent see it differently, there's where the board particularly is needed to help pull that together. Listen to the parents and communicate that to the teacher. Listen to the teacher and communicate that to the parent with discretion and tact, and weeding out the frustration that could be inherent in both sides. Sometimes it's easier for a third party. It's easier to share with a third party than with the other party directly, because some of the tension, some of the frustration can be taken out of that situation. And as a chairman, you play a really important role in pulling that together and communicating. So this child is having a particular issue in school. The teacher is frustrated. If the teacher speaks directly to the parents, and I'm going to say in just a minute that they should, but when that happens, sometimes frustration can come through and the parent doesn't really hear what the teacher is trying to say because they're experiencing their own set of emotions regarding this, and they have some things to say too. But they should be talking to each other. They do need to communicate, but they also need a third party to share with. And that chairman should be able to help pull the two sides together. Maybe you have some thoughts on how that can happen. Or any other thoughts you have. Easier said than done. I believe one of the keys in, if you're in the chairman position and you're trying to pull together two opposing concepts between a parent and a teacher, and you see both sides and you see why this side's frustrated and why this side is frustrated, one of the keys is for you to, well, it's patience. You need patience and acceptance of that situation. You're not going to push a magic button and make it go away. We have this, but we're going to nudge it in the right direction and help each side to cross the bridge and understand what the other one is experiencing. And it's amazing sometimes when you hear the teacher say so-and-so, and then you talk to the parent, and you realize the teacher didn't understand what the parent was saying. The parent is actually on board with what the teacher is trying to do, but they just have a little different perspective on this. You can pull it together. You need God's wisdom to help with that. Another point on etiquette is to visit school. But visit school with a purpose. Is it just the thing to do? You know that to keep up a good reputation as a board member, you got to get in that classroom, because the other board members might notice you haven't been visiting, or the teachers have noticed, well, that board member never showed up. But come with a purpose. And I don't know how involved you can get in the classroom when you step in, but one teacher suggested that the board members ought to come in and try teaching a new concept to a slow student. You know, maybe you need to prearrange that. I don't know. But that could be an eye-opener for you as a board member to understand what that teacher is experiencing there and the student. But look at the atmosphere. Is it a quiet and studious atmosphere? Are the children raising their hands to talk? Or is it kind of a wild, everyone's out of their desk, free for all? And sometimes you need to give guidance to that. Not on the spot, but later follow up with the teacher. And I noticed that, you know, a number of students weren't raising their hands to talk. Can you tell me what your policy is there? We do want, assuming you do want it, we do want a quiet and studious atmosphere where there's order. Also keep in mind when you're visiting that what you see may not be representative of a normal day. I have visited school at the end of a day already when things were a little chaotic, and I kept that in mind. I knew the students were tired, and it was the end of the day, and, you know, I used to teach school, and I've had bad days too. So be careful about labeling the teacher's abilities based on one visit like that. Come back to consideration. Think about what's going on. Put yourself into their shoes. How does the teacher or the students react to your stepping into the room? Is it a calm, relaxed atmosphere where you just step in and, you know, here he is, no big deal? Or is do you sense a lot of tension or, you know, whatever going on when you step in? Are you a friend or a critic, in other words? And when I say this, I'm putting it back on you, not on the teacher and the students. Do you bring a warmth into the classroom when you step in? Good etiquette is going to set clear expectations and guidelines. The school board is responsible to set expectations for the responsibilities of the teachers, of the parents. And sometimes, you know, we miss the boat. We didn't communicate clearly, and that's when we have an opportunity to apologize and say, I'm sorry, I should have communicated better on that. I remember when I was teaching my first year, I was a young 20-year-old teacher, and, you know, the school, it was a new community, new setting, and the community that I had come from, when it came to planning school trips or field trips, the school board took responsibility for that, and it was kind of a free day for the teacher. You know, they ride along and, of course, monitor their students, but they didn't have any responsibility to plan where to go and arrange the day and all of that. And as a young single teacher in this new setting, we were well into the school year. I guess when somebody commented to me, so where are you going on your school trip this year? I don't know. What? I thought the school board was going to manage this. And the teacher across the hall is busy planning his school trip. And I caught on by accident that I was completely responsible to plan a school trip and make the whole thing happen, which was okay. I got in the spirit of it and we figured out what to do. But it's just an example of where, particularly when it's a new teacher or a new family in the community that's using their school for the first time, or even new, you know, first grader for the first time for a family that's been in your community, make sure that you have clear expectations. Perhaps a school handbook would be a good thing, where you jot down some of the basic flow of the school year. Are you expected to be there on the first day of school? Is there some, you know, kickoff here where the parents are to be in? And that was another one for me. We once moved to a new community, and this was a brand new concept, but I just caught on by accident, fortunately a couple days before school started, that all the parents come to school the first day, and we have devotions together, and, you know, kind of a little bit of a start off here. Didn't know that. So as a chairman, be alert. Make sure you're communicating. A school handbook can be good. Parent expectation page for new parents. Just setting down some of the basics of how the school flows and what their responsibilities are. Maybe you have some more thoughts. We have a few minutes left. We could go many different directions with these three principles of etiquette. Open discussion. Are there any comments you have? Any questions?
Do you recommend teachers going to parents directly to try to fix the situation, or work with the student first?
So, do you recommend going to the parents or the student?
Yeah.
Is that your question?
Yeah.
Older students. Well, if something can be resolved, I think things should be resolved at the most elementary level possible. If it's something that can be resolved directly with the child in the classroom, that's great. It may be something you mentioned to the parents later that we had issue, you know, so-and-so, and here's how we resolved it. And communication there is important. If you're saying it's an issue that can't be resolved by working with a normal discipline in a classroom, then yes, talk to the parents. And if that doesn't resolve it, talk to the board. Personally, you can give your thoughts on this, but I think that as much as possible, the parents should be communicating directly, or the teachers should be communicating directly with the parents on issues as they come up. I'm sorry?
And the chair?
It depends what it is. Yeah. Depends on the seriousness of it. I don't think that it's necessary to run to the chairman with every little thing that comes up. But as far as problem solving, but for information, how's school going, here's something we faced. Maybe you have some thoughts. Was that the last bell? That was the second one. Okay. All right, well, we're going to wrap up with that then. Blessings as you implement your excellent etiquette.